You're listening to the High Spot Podcast presented by Brain Stew Radio. Brain Stew Radio is brought to you by Brain Stew Media. Check out studio rates, online mixing deals, and live sound recording by going to brainstewmedia.com. Brain Stew Radio graphics are designed by Skunk Duck Designs. For all of your graphic art needs, Skunk Duck, no one does it better. Brain Stew Radio is happy to be affiliated with Pro Wrestling Magic. Don't rely on superstars to deliver your high-quality, independent pro wrestling. Check out their upcoming schedule at WrestlingIsMagic.com.
Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
And that can only mean one thing. That means you are listening to the High Spot Podcast. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, as well as our partnership with Brain Stew Radio Network at Brain Stew Radio. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. Survivor Series came and went. We'll dive into that in a few minutes. Really excited, too. We also have Greg Carlwood. You want to talk about conspiracy theories? There was conspiracy at Survivor Series, and we'll have Greg Carlwood on momentarily. You guys can catch him on Twitter as well at Higher Side Chats, as well as HigherSideChats.com. We had a great conversation, Jeff and I did. But let me introduce Jeff right now. He's in remote, you know, a little distraught of what happened at Survivor Series. Couldn't face the music coming in studio talking with me. He is my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. And Jeff, you know, we're going to have Greg on pretty soon talking about conspiracy theories. I mean, I don't think anybody could have come up with this idea of what was going to happen. The main event, which Survivor Series was all built on, which was Brock Lesnar, Bill Goldberg, round two, if you could say, 12 years later. And shocking would be an understatement, wouldn't it?
It's crazy, man. I mean, we didn't do this on purpose. We didn't mean to put Greg Carlwood and the Survivor Series reaction both at the same thing, but you kind of intertwines because a lot of people now have their own theories of, you know, what happened that night. And, you know, me and you were watching that together, sitting down. We looked towards, you know, at each other after being in complete shock of having Goldberg, Brian, has not been in a ring in 12 years and just manhandled the Beast in less than 3 minutes. And what do we do? We shook our heads and we said it. The streak, John Cena visiting Suplex City 16 times at SummerSlam, and Randy Orton taking a vicious elbow by Brock Lesnar, making Brock Lesnar the ultimate beast, the ultimate, you know, just the guy in WWE, and then for him to be manhandled like that by Goldberg. We went through all scenarios with Jason Powell, you know, and we did it weeks and weeks, and never did we think that this would be the outcome. Just, I'm still hard to deal with right now, man. Just in utter shock.
Yeah, I'm sure Jason would never thought of this scenario either. I'm sure if we were to get him back on, he would be in the same boat that we're in right now. I mean, we spoke about it, Jeff, weeks leading up to Survivor Series about, you know, nostalgia feeling. Would it be the same thing? Would the idea of what Bill Goldberg was in WCW and his run in the WWE live up to the hype? I mean, he was in good shape. He definitely came out a lot of buzz for the main event. But you're right, to see that outcome didn't really make sense to me. You had kind of had your mouth open, like in utter shock, just like everybody in the audience. They were all excited, but I felt like, you know, where we were standing, you could hear a pin drop. But to me, I just ended up shaking my head.
I thought Brock was going to kick out, honestly. I really did.
I know. And like, we're trying to look at this, hindsight's 2020, Jeff. I mean, does it really make sense here? I mean, we know now, as Survivor Series ended on Raw, Brock Lesnar was not there, neither was Paul Heyman. And Bill Goldberg came out and said he has one more title run left in him, and seemed like he signed an extra deal, an extension, to go into the Royal Rumble. If you're booking the shift, does that make sense at all?
You know, I had a discussion with a couple other guys, too, and this is the first time I get a chance to talk to you about this. Is, you know, the WWE has such a tough time building stars. It's, you know, it's fine for the nostalgia factor like we had with Rock and Hogan, right? You feel that nostalgia because Hogan was coming back home. But now this nostalgia comes to the point where, like, you're really leaning on it to headline a lot of stuff. Man, there's a bunch of guys in that locker room who could have done much better, you know, just could have had a better rub by having them be Brock Lesnar. And we were going through with Jason Powell, like, well, who's next for Brock? Because we thought he was going to be diving to defeat Bill Goldberg. And then for Bill Goldberg to get that rub, I mean, it's got to say something about Mr. McMahon and what he feels, the confidence in that locker room of not thinking anybody else could do a good job or he could make money out of somebody else. it just leaves you shaking your head, man. Like, the future. What do you think the guys in the locker room are thinking right now when they saw that?
I mean, reports where they were utterly shocked, too. I'm sure nobody knew the ending. Everybody kept it close to the vest. But you're right, man. If I'm in that locker room, too, I'm just thinking to myself, really, we're bringing Goldberg now into the Royal Rumble. I mean, there's no indication he's going to be at WrestleMania, but you would think that's another plan as well, to have maybe a Lesnar-Goldberg or maybe Goldberg-Undertaker. I don't know. At this point right now, it's hard to make sense of anything that's going on. But I'm in the locker room, I'm like, right, so we're bringing in a 50-year-old guy, no offense to Bill Goldberg, to come and headline this for star power.
This is not Goldberg at all. This is not Goldberg. This is not towards Goldberg or Lesnar, because at the end of the day, Lesnar's getting paid, and he's laughing, and he's saying, I'm still getting paid, bitches. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
this is all about creative. This is all about just the booking aspect and thinking, man, there's somebody else in the locker room or in NXT that would have benefited more from that rub, from that push.
Yeah, and you mentioned it before, man. Like, with everything that Brock Lesnar had accomplished, everything the WWE did to help build this nostalgia of Brock Lesnar and this beast incarnate and all this stuff that he's been built up for as a machine and an unbeatable force, to have it done that way, to me, the one word I describe, Jeff, is utter disappointment. But if we look at the rest of the card real quick, let's talk about Raw versus SmackDown. You know, it was basically, they're building up that as well, the Survivor Series matches. I mean, when you look at it, Raw won 2 out of 3 right now. They basically won the women's elimination match. They won the tag team elimination match. And SmackDown Live, in a pretty peculiar way, having Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton as the two sole survivors, having the men's SmackDown beat Raw. I mean, ultimately, was this kind of how you perceived it to be, or were you a little surprised that it ended up the way it did?
I could have gone either way as far as the tag team, and, you know, I really thought that SmackDown Live was going to get the Cruiserweight division. It kind of sucks the way that match ended, Brian, because they busted their ass so much, Kendrick and Kalisto, right? And
yeah. For
it just to end like that, where Baron Corbin interferes. First of all, I'm not invested in Baron Corbin.
I don't think anybody is really.
Fan of Baron Corbin, right? For that matchup to get, just have that ending and have these guys really bust their butts and then have that outcome. I hate run-ins. I hate DQs after a hard-fought match. To me, it's like, man, like, it was for naught, this match with these guys. And, you know, it just shows you what they think of the Cruiserweight division, because it didn't even get a proper ending. You know, Baron Corbin comes in and puts a kibosh on, you know, anything. And that kind of, like, once that happened, I was like, whoa, maybe my prediction was wrong about, you know, NXT being a factor here. But really, the shocking thing of the night was that the Cruiserweight division didn't go to SmackDown, because, you know, it would have made sense with 205 Live debuting next week. But, yeah, you know what? I saw the women's match go, you know, kind of the way they were supposed to go, and then the tag team's going to go either way, but the shock of the night has got to be the Cruiserweight division not going to SmackDown.
Yeah, I mean, adding to the Brock Lesnar, Bill Goldberg match, this is obviously more disappointing, because you and I, we talked about that as well, and made more sense, and the whole situation now with the Intercontinental title staying on SmackDown with The Miz defeating Sami Zayn, that was also kind of, for me, it was like, what was the point of that?
You know, kind of Dolph Ziggler just lost?
Yeah.
Or defended against Sami Zayn?
Yeah, I mean, that would have been made more sense to me. But again, you know, I guess they're high on The Miz right now. So, I mean, let's quickly move over to Raw. Obviously, Raw was a big event after the whole buzz of Survivor Series. First thing that happened, Goldberg came out and his participation in the Royal Rumble. We had a whole bunch of things with, you know, the best thing of the night for Raw, which is a 3-hour show, was Jericho and Kevin Owens and the chemistry they have in the ring. They had the highlight reel episode. It looked like the two were going to split apart. And then they obviously didn't, and the crowd was so excited for it. I mean, if you want to talk about two more over guys, just look at Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens there. And then you had the main event, Kevin Owens against Seth Rollins for the Universal title. Amazing match. Ends up, again, Jericho interfering, Seth Rollins losing, and now moving in to, obviously, WWE Roadblock, which will be maybe 4 weeks away from now. And they have SmackDown Live. Jeff, I know you didn't get a chance to see SmackDown Live, but let me just tell you this, man. The way it's been going right now, and I know I was an advocate for James Ellsworth saying, you know, it's not too bad, but you're right, man. He has got to go. He's got some connection with the crowd for some reason, man, but I cannot stand any more of James Ellsworth. Maybe that's the reason why the WWE's keeping him, because he knows people can't stand him right now. He went on one with AJ Styles and defeated him once again for his SmackDown contract that he was going to get. So again, you have your world champion losing now 3 times in a row to James Ellsworth, which just makes AJ Styles more of a joke.
See, that's the problem, man. Like, I think Ellsworth on his own or just being a mascot or, I guess, a sidekick to either Styles or Dean Ambrose works. But when it starts affecting the guy that everybody loves and everyone respects in AJ Styles, he's just basically becoming a comedic champion. And I don't want to put that phrase with AJ Styles because he's so much better than that and deserves so much better. But yeah, the wrestling fan is going to be frustrated because Ellsworth is getting all this attention. You know, this is a guy, of course, who, you know, with the whole two fists, you know, as long as guys with two hands, he can fight or whatever he said against Braun Strowman.
Yeah, has a fighting chance, yeah.
Yeah, so ever since that, I mean, he's been over. And then, you know, he's not the prototypical look wrestler, indie lifer. So, I mean, I like it when they put him in comedic situations. To me, I think the best thing for him is to turn heel. Like I said, be kind of like with Jericho when he had Ralphus, you know, that kind of sidekick to the heel, or for him to think he's better than he is and then get his ass kicked. That's where the money is with Ellsworth. To see him get his ass kicked like he did at Survivor Series. But I think it was smart. I think it was clever what they did with him when he grabbed Strowman and then he ate the table. An amazing recovery time, too, by the way, to be able to beat AJ Styles in a ladder match for the contract, right? But we knew this was going to happen. He was going to be offered full time. He's not accepting bookings anymore on the independent scene. But when it affects AJ Styles, when it affects the man, the champ that runs the camp, that's when I have an issue with Ellsworth.
Oh, yeah. And unfortunately, I feel we're going to be talking a lot more about this scenario and what could possibly happen because, you know, leading up to TLC now will be AJ Styles against Dean Ambrose for the WWE World Championship. You have to think this is the final stage and the final battle between these two guys. And speaking of final battle, you know, we look at it right now, the Intercontinental Championship will also be on the line. Daniel Bryan announced it as well. It'll be Dolph Ziggler in a rematch against The Miz. I mean, these guys have had great matches, but is it time to kind of put the kibosh on this rivalry now?
Honestly, here's the funny thing. Like, you know how Bryan had admitted that match should have gone last? Do you think that they dare to make this matchup last at TLC?
I can't see them do that. I really can't. I mean, especially for a world title match. And to me, this thing, you know, we talk about Jeff's storylines wanting to continue longer, and that's what they're trying to do, kind of like old school way of doing it. But in this case, they've exhausted so much of Dolph Ziggler. Even if Dolph Ziggler wins this, which I don't expect him to, we'll talk about that as we preview TLC in the weeks to come. But what more is there for Dolph Ziggler after this? Once this rivalry is over, what do you do with him? The Miz, you know what you do with him. But with Dolph Ziggler, there's nothing.
When you toss around the title so much that when you become the champion the third or fourth time, it loses the value. I mean, so what if he becomes a five-time Intercontinental or whatever time? I mean, you even lose track of how many times he's going to be Intercontinental champion. You know, do you see Ziggler winning? No, because it's all on the Miz. He's the guy. He's the, you know, he's what's hot right now. All credit to him. But come on, man, Ziggler and the Miz. It just shows you that there's like no depth in that mid-card division on SmackDown.
Yeah, I mean, talk about death too, man. It's they announced it as well. It'll be Becky Lynch going one on one with Alexa Bliss for the SmackDown Women's Championship as well as TLC. I mean, this is a rivalry that had a lot of potential behind it. I like Alexa Bliss. You know, I love Becky Lynch, but doesn't seem to have a lot of momentum.
Alexa Bliss's stock is rising.
She is.
She is very good on the mic, very good with the reactions, and I just think that if you're gonna prolong this feud, I have no issues with it. I just want to thank whoever was the person that ended up beating up Nikki Bella, so we didn't see her on Survivor Series. So I want to give credit. If it was Natty, I say thank you so much. Thank you for a happy Thanksgiving gift by not letting us have to see Nikki Bella wrestle at Survivor Series. Isn't it funny, though, getting back to Goldberg and Lesnar, you know, whether this set up for WrestleMania, but isn't it weird to you that a guy, WCW guy, who Triple H and Vince McMahon had not had a good relationship with, that they entrusted him or they gave him, which was the golden ticket to beat Brock Lesnar. Isn't that just, like, crazy when you think about that?
I don't know if it's crazy. You know why? Because Vince McMahon has made some weird decisions before. I remember you telling me before, Jeff, like, when Undertaker lost the streak and everybody kind of tried to dissect it and saying, well, this is the only believable thing now. A guy like Brock Lesnar is the only guy who's believable that could beat him. Now, with Bill Goldberg, and I know there's been a lot of tension with history, you know, with Vince McMahon and Triple H especially, but again, even Bill Goldberg at 50 years old, is this the only chance where it's actually believable that somebody could beat Brock Lesnar? Because the way they've been building him up, who else was going to do it? Roman Reigns? John Cena's tried and failed. What other person's out there that could defeat Brock Lesnar?
And I'm pretty sure that's what they thought. I'm pretty sure that they, that's why Vince pulled the trigger. But to me, it's just, you know, a WCW guy, not someone who wasn't Vince's creation. You know how he is about that stuff. You know, that's why he impeded a lot of pushes in the WWE. And even the first Goldberg run, it was kind of like hindered because he was a WCW guy. And he just didn't quite fit in. And it's just funny, man, because this is, like I said, Triple H doesn't like the guy, or, you know, maybe that's changed, and Vince didn't like him at first. But, I mean, really, man, I guess at the end of the day, you got to pull the trigger on it, because who else is going to do it?
I guess time heals all wounds, Jeff, and as well as, you know, at this stage in Goldberg's career, too, if he can draw the money, I guess that's all that matters. If you're a draw still, then you're still somewhat, an asset to Vince McMahon, and I guess we'll find out what's going to happen in the Royal Rumble. I mean, to me, ultimately, if Brock Lesnar and Goldberg do go at it one more time, it doesn't matter, because in the end, if Brock Lesnar gets his revenge, the record books will still stay 2-1 Goldberg. So to me,
it did what it did. It got us talking about it, you know. It got everyone talking about it. Social media talked about it. So at the end of the day, WWE got what they wanted.
Yeah, good luck, WWE. Good job on that one there. But anyway, Jeff, you know, you can go back and forth on this and the conspiracies of what, you know, what was said, what was done. The betting odds on this whole situation changed drastically the night of Survivor Series. You know, a lot of things we could talk about in terms of conspiracy, but we were able to sit down with Greg Carlwood and have him on here and talk about conspiracy theories, which you and I, it's something that you and I are very passionate about too, because, and you know, we love talking about things, for example, like the moon landing or the John F. Kennedy assassination or the Titanic, or especially the political race we've been dealing with for the past, it feels like 7-8 months with the whole presidential election. So we're able to sit down with Greg Carlwood, which again, you guys can catch him on Twitter at HiresideChats, as well as HiresideChats.com. And we spoke to him about kind of, you know, what started him off with this whole conspiracy theory mindset to have, and where he started from, and where it led to him now. So this is what Carl had to say.
All right, Brian, as soon as I listened to one of my favorite podcast talk is Jericho, I knew I had to get this next guest on. And to me, really thankful that he can do this with us here today. And that is Greg Carlwood from Hireside Chats. And Greg, thank you for joining us. How's everything?
Yeah, hey. Everything's great. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. So listen, I listened to you on one of my favorite podcasts, Talk is Jericho, and you know, stuff like this has always been something that I've always wanted to dab in and talk about and discuss. But I'm like, you know, who could we have on and talk about this? And I knew that the second I heard you on Talk is Jericho that we had to have you on. So listen.
Well, first question I want to ask, Greg, how did you not completely fanboy? I know you kept your composure. I listened to the episode and like, wow, if I was sitting next to Chris Jericho and Jericho's talking to me, the, you know, little kid in me would be like, oh my God, I'm talking to Chris Jericho. How did you keep your composure during the whole time?
It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. Just the fact that it was in person made it all that much more kind of exciting for me, because I thought, oh, you know, we'll just talk on Skype. It won't be a big thing. But he's like, no, I'm going to be in San Diego, so let's do this at my hotel. And yeah, I mean, it was a little nerve-wracking, a little intimidating. But he was very gracious as a host. And I'm like, hey, Chris Jericho is going to ask me if I want a water, huh? I guess I'm doing all right in life.
I know, right? You can mark there, that right? off your bucket list there, Greg.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, what could we possibly have to talk about today, especially? But, you know, nothing's going on in the world right now, right? But listen,
no.
these presidential elections, man, a lot of people, I don't know, they're not taking it so well after the result.
And not saying it lightly.
It's pretty surprising to me that even just saying that Donald Trump is going to be the next president of the United States still hasn't really sunk in yet. Maybe it will in January, but, you know, talking about everyone thought it was a sure bet. It was a sure thing Hillary was going to win. And I, you know, was thinking to myself, I'm going to wake up and Hillary Clinton's going to win. And that's it. All the polls, everyone's saying, you know, this by a landslide. Oh, it'll be done in a few hours. What do you think happened, man? How could everyone have been so wrong?
Yeah, I was definitely surprised myself. I was wrapping up the ending to one of my shows while the results were coming in and Trump was ahead. And I still said, as I was putting out the show, I would be shocked if Hillary didn't somehow make this happen. And, you know, I should have kept my mouth shut because I woke up the next morning and it was all over. But, you know, my friend Gordon White, who is a chaos magician and a blogger and an author of several books, he did get it right. And he had been telling me for a while, Trump will win. This will be America's Brexit. And there's something changing on the national stage. It seems like, I don't know if it's a different network of controllers or something, but the globalist agenda is getting reeled back for some reason, starting with Brexit. And then here we have, again, a very parallel situation. Everybody thought it was going one way. We wake up and it goes the other way, and it goes in the favor of nationalism and away from globalization. So he had it right. And I, from that moment, I'm like, you know, you got to pay more attention to the wizards in your life because they know what's going on.
Yeah, right. So very true. Greg, after this election finally came and went and we found out that Donald Trump was going to be the 45th president of the United States, everybody now, especially depending on what side you're on, everybody, again, thought Hillary was going to win it. But now that Trump's won it, we have protests. Now everybody's saying conspiracy because Donald Trump himself would go out and say, oh, it's all rigged. It's a rigged system. The media's against him. Now, when you're talking about things with Chris Jericho on there, I still can't believe I said you talked to Chris Jericho. How cool is that, right? You're talking about, you know, the banking system being the most corrupt probably of them all, and everybody, you know, thinking about, you know, controlling and how we're being controlled. Is the media outlet that much that we kind of bought into what everybody was telling us rather than kind of, like you just mentioned, listening and really paying attention to what was going out there and really thinking that Trump had a chance on this?
Well, you know, a lot of people, since this has happened, have asked me if it affects my thoughts that elections are rigged. And it really doesn't, because I think that they're still rigged. I think the candidates are selected, not elected. You know, they already know of these two people. They've been thoroughly vetted by the powers that be to be allowed to be the party nominee. And I do think the elite know exactly what is going to happen with the election. Just because I didn't get it right and so many other people didn't get it right doesn't mean that, you know, there's any real integrity in the system. Like George Carlin said, if voting made a difference, they wouldn't let you do it. You know, it's kind of a silly sense of false power that I think people have. But I mean, it's still surprising. I think that people, and it's a good thing that people rejected that power network that we've seen for so long, because Hillary is giving speeches at Goldman Sachs for six-figure amounts. And
exactly.
I think that that's great that we chose a president who isn't. That doesn't mean there's anything pure about Trump, that he isn't also still controlled. But I think the protests are a little silly. I mean, what are you protesting? Do you think the election was rigged? Because if that's your contention, then you got a point. I mean, you know, you didn't think the election was fair. But if you just don't like the result, I mean,
that's just sour grapes, right? It's like, get over it.
I mean, if Republicans did it, they'd be, you know, they'd be like, oh, how could they, you know, if they fought fair and square in an election, the people decided, and some people just don't want to accept the results, you know?
Right. I think that's a little silly. And I also reject the notion that that Trump winning means America's racist. Yeah, the media has been telling you that for a long time. The media for this whole campaign has been saying that if X happens, X being Trump winning the nomination or winning the presidency, actually, that chaos would ensue, that it's Armageddon, that means Hitler is now the new president. Racism is rampant in America. And so they set you up with the equation. If X happens, it equals chaos. And then they made X happen. And so, of course, everyone is reacting as if, yeah, Hitler is the new president. And to be honest, when you talk about his comments on race, I mean, it's a couple of comments.
They get chopped up and then,
right.
You know, and they don't get told, you know, like in full.
And Hillary's made a couple of comments, you know, so they've both said some vaguely racist things. But I think the reason, you know, if we're going to assume there is some integrity in voting and say, why did the majority of the country vote for Trump? It's not because they're racist. It's because they care more about getting rid of entrenched power than they do about some offhanded comments. You know, surprise, surprise, some egotistical billionaire talks about grabbing chicks' pussies. You know, surprise, surprise. We're not, you know, we want to get past issues like that. The media can talk about that all day, but we want to talk about other things like how we're going to reel back some of these trade deals that have been bad for the country, how we're going to reel back globalization, you know, and we'll overlook almost anything because we want to get to those issues that, you know, the media is really not allowing coverage on.
I mean, obviously, you know, you have your podcast and your website, you know, higher-sidechats.com, where we can go and you talk about all these things. And so you're kind of, in a way, in the media, and me and Brian are also in the media, and this is what we love to do. How disappointed are you that being associated with that kind of media? Like, what's happened? What's changed that? Have we just grown up? Is it just a different world that now we can't even trust the media, the very outlet that gives us our information that we're supposed to depend on and rely on?
Well, I think people gave up on traditional media institutions a long time ago, or they definitely should have. And we're lucky that the internet has come along and allowed for independent media to be there as an alternative. That's on my show. That's what I do, is I talk to researchers and authors of various conspiracy or fringe perspectives, and I give them 2 hours and I help make that their case, whatever it may be. Sometimes that means playing devil's advocate, saying, hey, you know, some people are critical of this point or whatever. But we walk through their material and their perspective. And at the end of the episode, you know, the audience decides how much stock they put in that idea, or no, that's too crazy, or whatever. But the point is, mainstream media has a serious quarantine against anything that doesn't fit the narrative they're given from the top down. I mean, what is it? 90% of all media is controlled by the same 6 companies? There's no integrity there. You can't trust them when they have all these corporate sponsors. And, you know, it's basically a big umbrella where these massive multinationals have arms in every sector. You know, one, they have a media sector. They have connections to big pharma. I mean, that's one of the big things people say now, is if you watch any traditional TV, the only commercials you see are cars and drugs, you know, pharmaceuticals and cars. Like,
which can also be manipulated too.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
What kind of car should you buy, or what's the best, you know, relief for your headache or something like that? That's all controlled, basically, and telling us basically what we want to see. Greg, something that I wanted to ask you when Jeff said that we're able to get you and we're so gracious again to give us a little bit of your time here, is that I've always been somebody who's always questioned why. I mean, when I was younger, it was always, you know, listen to your parents, listen to your teachers, listen to authority figures, they're right, you're not, and never question it, basically. I kind of grew up that way. And only as I got older did I realize, you know what, I don't have to follow what everybody says is the norm. Now, you obviously have a website, higher-sidechats.com. It's kind of a forum where people go and talk about, you know, conspiracy theories and things of that nature. Now, pretty much I feel that anything could be a conspiracy theory as well, and we'll dive into a few in a few minutes here. But my question to you is, I've always been told never listen to, like, the mainstream media. Always research it yourself. Always look it up for it. Never just believe what everybody says. Now, I so much always want to dive into myself, but for somebody who doesn't know, and again, everything can be manipulated on the internet too in terms of what type of information they give out there. How do you go when people ask you a question about something maybe you're not familiar with, and you go, how do you source out and weed out all the crap and look at what's the basic facts? Or is it really just depend on your opinion or how you kind of view it at that moment?
Well, I'm not really one of these people who thinks you need absolute facts. A healthy dose of speculation isn't so bad, because a lot of times these things are off limits. To really get to the core of what the nefarious elite might be up to, some of their campaigns, you're not going to find a lot of absolute proof, because they're careful and because the media is not doing their job. They're all on one team. So a lot of times we get indications of certain things, or we'll have a certain, you know, exhibit A for a certain topic in the conspiracy world. But a lot of times you do have to speculate. And if you're going to be one of these people who waits for absolute verifiable proof of something like, you know, a child pedophilia network among the elite, which I think there is, and there's been a lot coming out about that finally in the Podesta emails, but there's other cases too. But, you know, it's like you can't, you're not, if you wait until Fox News and CNN and MSNBC are willing to cover it, you're going to be waiting forever. So,
oh yeah, you're never going to hear about it.
Speculation.
And you'll be left out of the loop, yeah. But how do you go about doing it? Where do you go to research these things? Or just basically just surfing the net and seeing what comes up?
Well, yeah, a long time ago, I've been doing this for 10 years, having an interest in conspiracy basically as long as the internet's been around. And
thank God dial-up's gone, right? It'd take forever to do it.
Right, it was all AOL.
Imagine you're reading on something, all of a sudden say, goodbye. Exactly. Like, I got to dial back up again. Oh, man, come on.
Somebody called the phone. My parents are yelling at me, get off the phone line. yeah, those were the days.
Yeah.
But usually right now, it comes from the guests themselves, because when I'm preparing for a show, I'm getting really deep into a guest's work. Sometimes I read two or three of their books, depending on what kind of work they have in their catalog. I digest as much as I can. Mm-hmm. And so that would be where I get a lot of the information now. So you just got to find specific researchers you trust. I've got several. I think Joseph Farrell is really great. Gordon White, my buddy I mentioned earlier. I think Chris Knowles is doing some great stuff when it comes to looking at the occult in Hollywood and some of the deep state projects. So you just got to find specific people that you find trustworthy. You know, and even still, I don't adopt everything that they say. I don't agree with them on every issue, but you know, a lot of it is trusting yourself, because you cannot trust the official story in a lot of cases, or the official media and the official narrative. So you got to kind of piece it together for yourself, create your own roadmap.
Now, you've said numerous times that 9/11 is what got you starting to question things. Going to that, and, you know, we all remember that day. And, you know, when you first see it, and everyone knows where they were when that happened. You know, I'm at school and in college, and everyone's telling me, oh, a small plane landed and it hit the World Trade Center. And then you know, you go home and you see the carnage that happened that day. You have different thoughts of what happened, and I've spoken to a lot of people who have similar thoughts, and we'll get into just, you know, what I think and what Brian does. But basically, what do you think happened that day? Because we've talked about the election, but you know, getting into 9/11, what do you think happened that day?
Well, when approaching 9/11, I think the best way to dismantle it is that what we were told happened is a definite lie, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the fact that we think two planes hitting the Twin Towers is what caused them to free fall collapse, I mean, that makes no sense to me. The Pentagon saying that got hit by a plane, yet there's no wreckage, it was more like a missile of some type. I mean, it's very clear the official story is a lie. What actually happened, again, that is beyond my realm of really knowing, because of course that material is under lock and key. But if I had to take my best guess, I think the work of Dr. Judy Wood is pretty spot on. I mean, she's written a textbook. She's a PhD in several areas. And this book is just, Where Did the Towers Go is what it's called. And she lays out step by step her case that some exotic technology was used on these Twin Towers, that it wasn't necessarily what people say. A lot of conspiracy theorists go the route that it was a professional demolition. Well, she says, no, it couldn't be, because you can actually get seismic data for a place like Ground Zero or that, you know, Manhattan, anywhere really, I guess. But if you look at the seismic data of what should have happened when tons and tons of steel and rubble crash into the ground, is it's going to make waves. And it didn't at all. So the seismic data shows that all that steel and tons of material did not crash down to the ground. So what happened to it? Well, she talks about this process of dustification, or basically vaporization, which is definitely out there, but it's the point is she's trying to make is that there was exotic technology used, that this was kind of a showing of real authority from behind the veil, and no one has really opened that can of worms, but you got to account for real data, which is there. And she has multiple things in the book, but the one that always comes to my mind that I thought was most convincing is the fact that the seismic data shows no impact in the ground, no waves, no collapse of anything. So you have that's real data that needs to be accounted for. How you account for it, you know, I don't know, but you can't just ignore it, can you?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I think what people don't want to admit is that, you know, our country could be behind something like this, you know. And you've said too that this raises like false flags that, you know, that that, you know, our country or somebody, you know, behind it as a president could do something for a cause. What could have possibly been a motivation for something like that for this country to do?
Well, obviously money is at the heart of it, and control is at the heart of it. I mean, look back. I feel like if you're in 2016 looking back, you can see 9/11 as a serious pivot point for this country. I mean, now we can't wear shoes on an airplane. We have the TSA issues. Have you tried to fly in the past 10 years? Like, when is the post 9/11 world? Because all I see is more surveillance, increasing the war on terror, and all this stuff is kind of nonsense, because we're talking about an issue that happened One time that I think of course is highly suspect, but even if you don't, even if you buy the official story, can you really say terrorism is a serious problem, especially for Americans? I mean, if you're going to go worldwide, you could make the argument, but Americans don't care about anybody else. So is terrorism a real problem? I mean, how many people have really died from it? Why don't we tackle something like heart disease or cholesterol? You know, why don't we get sugar out of our diets? Because a lot more people are dying from the food company's infestation in our country rather than terrorists. But again, they do what nets them the most control and the most financial gain. There is the argument, Larry Silverstein, I believe is his name, who had a really interesting insurance policy that handled terrorism that wasn't in place but a few years earlier. So yeah, of course, they make money on the front and back end. You got a lot of people think Dick Cheney was very integral in the planning. Of course, Halliburton gets the contracts to first blow up Iraq and then rebuild it. So, I mean, there's definitely money-making schemes. The military-industrial complex needs somebody to go after. And terrorism is the boogeyman that you can never really get because it's an idea. Just like people now, all these Clinton protesters are out there to stop racism. Well, you know, we can be as nice to each other as we can be, and we can condemn racism when it happens, but it'll never be over. You can't force someone to have non-racist thoughts or force someone to be nice to black people or Chinese if they don't want to be. And, you know, you just have to accept that occasionally somebody's going to shoot some people, and it's not good, and we don't want it to happen, and we want to minimalize it, but a global war on terror that has cost the taxpayers X amount of dollars and has caused X amount of trouble and has thrown several nations into chaos. I mean, is it all worth it over, even if 9/11 was the official story, if it was valid? I mean, I just don't see it. So I think you can extrapolate a lot from that and what they've been able to achieve in terms of increasing surveillance, increasing control, making plenty of money in the meantime. So I think there's plenty of motivation there. I mean, what gives anyone the indication that government really cares about anything? Has any president in the last 30 years done anything about serious poverty? I mean, not really. No, I don't see any indications that government really cares about anything but keeping control.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail right on the head there, Greg. Like for me, for the longest time, I've always thought money has been the first and foremost thing that influences everything, basically. I mean, we worry about it waking up every single morning, Jeff and I having our normal, you know, 9-to-5 jobs and scraping, getting that dime and looking at that paycheck, whether it be electronic or it gets thrown into our account directly or vice, whatever you want to do, and worrying about that dollar. All these companies, I mean, you talked about 9/11, and when you're also talking about, for example, the banking system, that's the most corrupt of them all, and how, like, it seems like elites seem to tend to control everything. I mean, perfect example, for the longest time, we're dealing with natural resources being consumed, like oil, and our environment getting, you know, obviously worse for it, and ultimately, I was always wondering where all these other alternative sources. I mean, we work so hard in technology. Why don't we have these sources now to have an alternative form of energy? And it doesn't happen. But you know, companies like the coal companies and the oil companies don't want you to use them because that's money out of their pockets, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's actually a big conspiracy that the whole patent system is set up to catch people coming up with exotic technologies and then suppressing them, buying them out, or killing them in some cases. And you can find, if you do the research, that's the thing, is people who are most skeptical of this stuff have just never looked into it. But you can do the research and you can find out that there's been more than a dozen cancer cures over the course of time. And these people are marginalized, kicked out of their country, having their devices destroyed. And this also goes the same with energy. I mean, there's plenty of people who've developed maglev technology, Tesla coils, advanced things like that. I mean, everybody knows the Tesla story for the most part, that because his energy was just pulled out of the air as opposed to Edison's, which was more controllable, he was defunded and died nearly penniless, and the FBI raided all of his work and took that stuff into the deep projects. So,
which goes against the whole theory of, you know, you've got a great idea, hey, just sign a patent and the United States will back you up, right? Completely goes against that notion that we are forced to believe in.
Plus, if you find another alternative, the other companies are going to feel threatened, and then they're going to try to eliminate you. So, in fact, the idea where we all help each other out
it's not the case. Everyone's trying to compete with another and trying to wipe you out. You know, imagine if right. they did find a cure for cancer and they're holding it back because, you know what, then the pharmaceutical companies, they go out of business. Then the doctors and all that. I mean, it just, to me, it sounds so wrong, you know, when you think about that yeah. people could be like that.
Well, one great real world example that people should know about is prohibition. I always considered prohibition to be just this weird chapter in American history where the religious right actually rose up around this central cause and made it happen. Alcohol is illegal. I thought, well, that is a weird chapter in our history. But it turns out, surprise, surprise, nothing happens unless there's a wealthy industrialist at the top turning the screws, you know, pulling the puppet strings. And that's exactly what happened here, because vehicles, especially farm equipment, ran on alcohol. Henry Ford's early vehicles ran on alcohol or oil. And people don't know this, but it was the Rockefellers and Standard Oil who was behind prohibition, and it wasn't about consumption of alcohol. They don't care if you kill yourself, drown in this shit. They don't care. But what they do care about is if you're putting it in your vehicles, if you have a still on your farm and you're basically manufacturing your own fuel, that they care about. So they took that ability away. That's what prohibition was about. So for 10 years, one solid decade, it was illegal. They bring it back for consumption because people are selfish and all they care about is guzzling the stuff. And so they bring it back and everybody forgets. Everybody forgot that it was ever a fuel, and they forgot that they had that really empowering ability to have control over their own energy in a certain way. And, you know, now everybody is all excited about ethanol, 10% ethanol. Yeah, we had that. We had that as soon as we had cars. And there's also the story that London had, it was London or Paris, but one of them had a really intricate and advanced network of taxis that were electric, you know, and talking like 60 years ago.
Really?
So again, wow. Yeah. And you can, you know, the best research I say is there's a documentary called Pumped, I believe, but also James Corbett is a really good researcher that I trust for the most part. I think he's a little too far on the libertarian, like too little too obsessed with that concept. I don't think any one concept can work for everybody, but he does make some great documentaries. One of them is the history of big oil and prohibition. It gets into all that stuff and how they really made their money and how they really changed the course of history in this country. A lot of socialists like to cite the highway system is one of our great achievements. Again, they were behind that. They wanted to make sure that they could use public money to put in infrastructure for their vehicles to sell oil. Because if you have public transportation in every major city that's good, you're not going to use your car. So they destroyed a lot of the other options. The train industry, they wiped that out. And they made sure that everybody was going to be driving with their oil. So a lot of influence, and that's just one example of how there all are alternatives out there. And this is just one we know, a rudimentary, basic one. And
there's
it's
probably thousands out there we don't know about, right?
Right, right. It's just one real-world example for anyone who doubts that you could go deeper down that rabbit hole.
Well, we're talking about media influence. We're talking about government influence of our leaders, of our, you know, of who we elect, of companies and everything, and. You know, so really, you know, makes you think of all these things where you're going in a world where you think something is so and so, but then in reality, there's so many questions that you can go to and delve in them. And that's why we got one of the best.
And the tough thing about that, Jeff, is, and I'm sorry to cut you off there, but the tough thing about that, you said pose a lot of questions, but I feel. And Greg, I don't know if you agree with me now, but society more than ever, I mean, it's been around forever. Like you talk about racism, you talk about sexism, you talk about, you know, gender equality and things of that nature. It's been around for years. So the very thought of us questioning things and just going by what other people say or going by what the media says and what the social norm is, it's just the way people are. They refuse to ask the questions. And to me, that's the most scary thing than all.
Right. Well, I think if you ask most people just the blunt question, do you trust government or do you trust the media? Most people are going to say no. But when you get into specific events or specific narratives, they don't stray from the official one most of the time. That's what's weird is on the surface level. No, I don't trust government. No, I don't trust the media. OK, well, where do you think they're lying to you? Can you point out one of these things that you think they've lied about? Because when it comes to 9/11 or most major events, you seem to be relatively on board in most cases. That seems to be what I find. So it's like there's an open-mindedness at the same time, not when you get down to specifics.
There's an open-mindedness, which is why when he tells me it's like, you know, about 9/11, I have to have an open mind because, you know, I'm being fed stuff that I thought was true and it made some sense. But then in the emotion, when you're caught up in an event like that, you're not looking at the TV and like, well, you know, this doesn't look right. But when you have time to digest everything, then you start to question it. And, you know, a lot of stuff that you're saying makes sense. To me, what bothers me about 9/11 is, you know, the Pentagon and that plane, because that just looked, that was to me, out of everything, that's what looked so off out of everything was, right, was the footage, you know, and that, you know,
definitely
makes you raise questions. And it happens too at my job, people going back and forth saying, no, this is what happened, that's what happened. And it's good to have that debate. You know, it's good to ask questions, because if you just let, you know, if you're just, you know, oh, accept everything, that's sometimes not a good way to live, you know. Right. It's always good to ask questions. Well, one of the other things that we have questioned about is Brian and I, we've, you know, we're still wrestling fans, Greg, and we've hopped around to the last WrestleManias or so, and the last one was in Dallas, and we went to Dallas, and of course, one of the first things we wanted to visit in Dallas, of course, was where, you know, John F. Kennedy was assassinated. You know, you go there, and there's still, people get, you know, huddled up, and they're looking.
Talk about conspiracies, right? The mother, to me, this is the mother load of all conspiracies, because to me, I don't think we'll ever truly find out what happened.
This is the one that fascinates me, you know, a lot. And just because, you know, you see the stuff on History Channel and you see all the...
Jeff is a nut on the History Channel. Whenever there's a John F. Kennedy conspiracy biography or something like that, Greg, he cannot take himself away from the TV. He's got to listen.
It's like if you watch a good movie, uh-huh, and no matter how many times it comes on, you're still drawn and have to watch it. Every time, you know, we get near the assassination anniversary and those stuff comes on, I'm just hooked on it, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, again, you're thinking, okay, he was assassinated from the Book Depository by Lee Harvey Oswald, and you accept it. But then, you know, they have the mystery gunmen and the grassy knoll, and then you have that, you know, the mafia was involved, the you know, Cuba, the Castro was involved too. To me, honestly, I got to the point where I thought, you know, Lyndon Johnson was behind it. If you ask me, you know, that's what I thought. What kind of theories have you looked into on the assassination, and what can you come up with?
Well, it is like 9/11 again. That it's like, what really happened is going to be beyond the scope of our knowing, but what didn't happen, we can know, and that's the official story. I mean, it's pretty easier. It's easier to take the story and dismantle it than it is to say exactly what happened. But you're right. There are so many theories and counter theories. Cubans, CIA, mafia. Everyone's been to been blamed for this. I actually had a recent guest who threw up some connections between the founders of Scientology and the JFK assassination.
I never heard that one, actually.
Well, the part of it I found most interesting is, according to his work, some handwritten letters that were supposed to be written by Lee Harvey Oswald, when you do handwriting analysis on them, they are a match for L. Ron Hubbard.
No, that's right. I did read about that and heard, yeah, actually. They were mentioning in a biography. They were comparing the autograph signatures of Lee Harvey Oswald. Yeah. That was intriguing.
So it's really, really hard to know who's involved and what the truth is. I mean, why was it done? Was it because he was trying to set up an alternative currency to the Federal Reserve? Is it because he was about to disclose things about UFOs? You know, every reason has been given, and I like to hear them all. I'm pretty good at taking a lot of different models and just being able to entertain them all separately and maybe giving them a percentage, as opposed to saying, this was what happened, this is my new religion, I now preach, you know, that it was the mafia because of this. You know, some people get really into choosing a narrative, and I don't really think you have to choose one. I mean, you can listen to multiple perspectives and draw your own conclusion. I think that the currency idea holds water. I mean, I've seen books that people have written where they produce documents that look ultra official about the fact that he was looking into perhaps something with silver and going into a silver-backed currency. But then you can also find a memo that was written about disclosing UFO information, that he wanted to get all the information he could get. He wanted it, and he wanted it now. There's that possibility. There's also the third rail of the Operation Northwoods scandal. And this is another thing people should know. If you don't think 9/11 was any kind of conspiracy, you should look into both the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which really happened and they've now admitted was a false flag. So they do these things. But you should also look into Operation Northwoods, which was something, a document, a plan signed by the Department of Defense, all the main people that were going to be in the war room. And it was brought to John F. Kennedy and they said, hey, here's our plan. We're going to attack one of our own ships, we're going to say Cuba did it, and we're going to go in and we're going to get Castro. And yeah, I mean, we're going to sacrifice some military guys, but we're going to say we did it. It's going to get everybody pumped up, and then we're going to go do what we want to do. Sounds like a parallel to 9/11, if you ask me. So,
And you don't think Kennedy was up for that, right? He wasn't up for it.
He very much, it's very official that Kennedy said, we are not doing this, guys. I don't know what you're suggesting. So there's multiple areas. Also, there's this theory that he was going to dismantle the CIA because he thought they were out of control, which might tie into the Operation Northwoods memo also. But yeah, he was pumping the brakes on a lot of the shadow government's plans. And whether it's UFOs, a secret currency, or didn't want to go through with a false flag, these are all things that happen because of the shadow government, the nefarious elite, you know, the capstone of the power pyramid, whoever, whatever you want to say. These people, they have these agendas and they operate through public figures. And if you don't do what they say, they just get rid of you.
You know,
and
that's definitely
what I think happened for one reason.
And then
or
when
another.
When you think of it, it's so much easier to tell somebody something back then in the '60s because, you know, now we have so much data and now we have so much things to look at. You know, back in the '60s, people probably would just believe assassination attempt, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald. And it's crazy, too. But, you know, honestly, I'm going to think it has to be maybe race related, too, because he was a very dynamic president when it came to that. And the whole segregation, I don't think a lot of people were keen on that. And that also, I think, could be a reason why, you know, especially with, you know, with Robert Kennedy, too, how much they were about civil rights and towards African-Americans. What do you think about that?
I think it's one of those reasons, you know, one of those things he was doing that they don't like. I don't know exactly how key a role the race relations played in it, but it definitely could have been instrumental. He was inspiring a lot of people, bringing people together and preaching peace. I mean, these are all things that are a detriment to the powers that be.
Definitely. I mean, talking about this, and I just sit back, listen to you talk, Greg, and I'm just like, wow, you know, a lot of this stuff makes sense when you connect the dots, but unfortunately, there are not a lot of people that are willing to go that extra mile. I mean, you talked about how people generally talk about how, well, I don't believe the media, I don't believe in our government. All right, well, what particularly don't you like about it? And I don't know, and they kind of ventured back towards what society tells them to think or what the media tells them to think of when it comes to events like 9/11 or the John F. Kennedy assassination. I mean, going back to JFK's assassination, you know, the way that, you know, when he was rushed to the hospital and, you know, people were in the room that weren't supposed to be in the room and the autopsy was done incorrectly and all these cover-ups and all these things happening behind the scenes, and you're thinking, wow, why isn't anybody drawing attention to this? Especially Lee Harvey Oswald looked like a guy that, you know, was actually holding a secret and like knew he had a death sentence, not by the government, but people were out to get him. So all these loopholes and things and stories, and I think half the fun of these conspiracy theories, for me at least, is to, you know, take something that people have told us and like say, wait a minute, that's not right, and find the loopholes in it, which is amazing. But now, something I know which is true and dear to your heart, Greg, is the fact that, you know, everybody's talking about the legalization of marijuana now. I mean, who doesn't love that, right? I mean, RVD, right? 420.
Amen,
right? But, I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, I always hear, you always hear two sides of it. I mean, I think they're more than just two sides to a story. Everybody, some people are happy for it. Other people are like, oh, this is terrible. You know, I've had friends saying, hey, I finally can't wait for it to be legalized. And then others are saying, wait a minute, that's wrong. You can die from it, though there have been no studies to prove die from marijuana, but you can die from alcohol poisoning.
Or it leads to there are no other addictions, or at least harder drugs, you know.
So what if it does? Isn't that the right of an individual? Shouldn't we have sovereignty over our own mind and consciousness and body? The idea that a government body can lock a man in a cage for choosing to smoke a plant is asinine. I don't know how anyone could really agree with that paradigm. I mean, even if you don't want to do it yourself, you really don't think that people are sovereign over their own bodies. I mean, I just think that's ridiculous. But yeah, you made a great point about there are no recorded deaths from it at all. Yet, you know, try drinking a whole bottle of Jack and surviving the night. Like, you can obviously die from all kinds of stuff. Tylenol, you could take a bunch of pills and die.
Yeah.
I mean,
alcohol, you assume you mess up your, you know, your kidneys, your liver, you know? I mean,
you can die from water and drown yourself by drinking too much water, too. So everything in excess is bad, in theory.
And I think you should have the right to kill yourself. Maybe that's controversial, but
I want the right
over my own body. As long as I'm not hurting anybody else, I should be able to destroy my body if I want to. I mean, I don't know why you would, but, you know, you should be able to play with consciousness, to alter it as you see fit, to explore the realms that are not available to a sober mind. And that should be your right and privilege of manifesting in 3D reality.
Do you think it's something that's going to be brought up, the same thing, similar to like when there are other sources of energy out there? They're going to try to stop marijuana from being legalized because, you know, the alcohol companies and the tobacco companies don't want that to happen because that could be money out of their pocket as well?
Well, it's definitely tobacco companies, but I think even more so, it's big pharma. A lot of people talk about the medicinal benefits of marijuana. This is one of the potential cancer cures. If you've looked into Rick Simpson at all, he was a guy who heavily, heavily concentrated marijuana. He calls it his Rick Simpson oil. And he calls it Phoenix Tears also. And he started giving it to people for cancer and all kinds of different things. And he has a laundry list of things he says he can cure with his concoction. He has a lot of provable results. You go to his website and it's just comment after comment of, thank God you taught me how to make Rick Simpson oil, because he can't sell it now, but he can tell people how to make it on their own if they're willing to take the risk. And you changed my life. You know, my wife now has a better quality of life. She beat cancer. Like, there are a lot of, I don't see anybody saying he's a snake oil salesman. I mean, I really don't. It's pretty overwhelming positive results from Rick Simpson's work. And I think he's Canadian and was kicked out of Canada, now lives in some other country trying to talk about this stuff. But I think it's Big Pharma who's most upset about it, because they're giving us all these pills that are basically, you know, chemical based, oil based. It's the same network who came up with Big Pharma and got us away from natural cures. And yeah, they're not going to be happy about it. Originally, when marijuana was made illegal, a big part of it was because of its textile uses. And it was kind of the big paper back in the day, Dunder Mifflin and Co., who really didn't want people having an alternative to the textiles. So yeah, it would be great if we could just use things that work and are easy to, you know, it takes a lot less time for weed to grow than for redwoods to grow. So we could replace a lot of our usages with a way more sustainable crop. People could be engaging in other realms of consciousness that I think are largely, largely beneficial, both therapeutically and just euphorically. I think it's an amazing substance, and it does help you to see through a lot of the bullshit. And that's another reason why you can't have it. You can't have mushrooms. You can't have LSD. We let some people have that in the 60s, and we almost lost control of this thing, so we're putting it all back in the box. You can have alcohol because it's not going to make you question your reality, and you're still going to go to work on Monday. But we can't give you the joint because you're going to start saying, what am I doing with my life? The man's got me by the balls. Do I really need this? You know, I'm got this expensive car just so I can get to and from work, and I'm in so much debt. Screw this shit.
And how
so you
much,
can't have that.
And how much better are conspiracy theories when you're a little high? Come on now.
I think that's when everybody opens up more, don't you?
Yeah.
You're actually more open to reason.
Yeah, there's an archetypal path, I think, that a lot of people have experienced, where you either smoke some weed, or you do mushrooms, or you do LSD. And I think all of them are really great at targeting certain aspects of life and kind of holding yourself up to the mirror and showing you, like, you know, this is kind of stupid, you know, whether it's the fundamental illusionary nature of 3D reality, whether it's, you know, it was salvia that took me straight away from atheism because I was introduced to entities in some kind of strange experience. But if you experiment with these things rather than just saying, oh, the government doesn't want me to have them, I'm not going to have them, I think you really owe it to yourself as an adventurer, as a person who manifested here, which is pretty awesome, a pretty awesome place to be, having a life and a body. You should probably experience some stuff rather than just sitting there watching Game of Thrones and more Netflix and going to work on Monday.
Which is a great show, by the way. I've never watched it myself personally, Game of Thrones.
I watch a lot of bad TV, but I rationalize the fact that I don't have a 40-hour-a-week job anymore. That means I should be able to watch, you know, 25, 30 hours of shit television, and I'm still coming up a winner, right?
Wow, I liked Greg. Now I don't like him so much. He doesn't have a 40-hour work week like we do. He's out in sunny San Diego, California. We're suffering here in the cold weather, freezing our asses off. Damn you, Greg.
Eventually, that's what we want to do. You know, everyone wants to get that 40-hour a week job, like, just out of the way. And, you know, the fact that you've done it and you've probably taken the chance, you know, at first it was, you know, a chance. But you were like, you know what? I gotta bet on me and I got to do stuff that makes me happy.
And let that be the real lesson here. You know, maybe 5 years ago, I was a GameStop store manager in some shit random GameStop dealing with, you know, how Black Friday's coming up, for Christ's sake.
Retail.
You know, that was my reality, waking up at 3 a.m. after Thanksgiving dinner and going and opening up a store where people are lined up around the corner.
Ready to run you over.
Yeah, screw all that. And I really think that the problem is people accept mediocrity. They settle. You know, I love my parents.
Quoting Jericho right now. You're quoting Jericho in his promo. Mediocrity is excellence. No. Greg is excellence.
Well, I was going to say, my parents were always great to me, but I would see my dad come home from a 9-to-5 job he hated, and he would have a headache on the couch for several hours. And I would just be like, man, I guess that's life. I guess I'm going to turn 18 and then life is just shit for the rest of time until I retire. And I really rejected that narrative. Even though I didn't have really a great example of someone who made it independently, I just couldn't do it. I lost 10 years of my life to retail management, trying to do, you know, the right thing, just getting a job and trying to save money and all this stupid shit. I did it for a long time. I lost a decade to it, and it's a shame. But don't ever accept it. You can climb out of it, and you should always be working towards that future, because I know so many people. I quit 5 years ago and I still have friends who are in that same job still saying I hate it and I'm going to do something else eventually, and time just marches on and no one ever does. And if you don't, you know, you're setting yourself back.
Talking about that, I mean, having a side gig, and obviously you said not just accepting mediocrity, right? But for me personally, and I'm not going to include Jeff in this because I know Jeff, he cowers everything I say. I'm joking, Jeff.
Nice.
But for me, you're right. People shouldn't just accept mediocrity. I mean, this is, I think, a main reason why Jeff and I, we're gracious to have you here and to come and do this. And Jeff and I are kind of being our new world here. For people out there that are conspiring, just accepting what everybody else is throwing at them. I mean, they go to these media outlets like, you know, they name one and you go. I think paper right now is completely irrelevant now and obsolete, you know, when you try to find out information. How can people get out of that too? It's just an individual thing, right? You're going to have to want to accept it, not listen to what the masses are telling you, right?
Right. I mean, if you want to get out of consensus reality, you got to stop paying attention to it to some degree. You got to actually dig and take responsibility for your own knowledge. Luckily, we have the internet. Luckily, it's right there in front of you. As you're listening to me talk right now, you could be looking up the Franklin scandal if you doubt that there's really a pedophilia network out there. You could be looking up the Titanic conspiracy if you don't think false flags ever happen. You could look up Operation Northwoods. It's all there. It's all right there. You're not going to get it from the mainstream narrative because they're controlled by the same people who carry out a lot of these things. So,
and a great point you brought up too, when you were talking about everybody believed, you know, we were the first ones to land on the moon, and you bring up the fact that probably, for most people's cases, they all feel it did, but most likely it didn't happen. And if you say that, you're like, it's sacrilegious. I think people carry too much emotion behind these beliefs of what happened on 9/11, the moon landing, the Kennedy assassination. You name one, they have some emotion behind it. They're just so closed-minded to believe. I mean, can you believe if they – I mean, there is evidence out there of the photos, and you've talked about it to a very lengthy extent. And, you know, it'd be hard-pressed not to believe that the fact the moon landing didn't happen. But just talking about that, doesn't this all feel similarly, and I like to bring wrestling in for some reason, doesn't this all feel, from the election to all this, like some guy, some genius just booking these things correctly, and we're
it's
like scripted, audience,
like,
just kind of buying into it like the WWE?
Absolutely. You can make that analogy for sure. And the moon landing is another one of those things that if you've never looked into it, of course you don't doubt it. And people who say, oh, that's goofiness, that's silliness, you haven't looked into it, I'm pretty sure, because it's not a guess. I'm not flipping a coin or just trying to be controversial. Look into it. Here's the thing. Again, with like these other conspiracies, I can't prove we never went to the moon. Maybe we have. I wouldn't be surprised if we've gone to the moon. But we did not go to the moon in that footage, with that technology and in those missions. We did not do it. And if you look at the, and the reason is there's obviously multiples, but there is no impact crater under it. If you look at the pictures of the rover, there are no tracks leading up to it or behind it. If you look at the backgrounds of the photos, there are different ones where you can see they use the exact same background. Like the mountain ridges are exactly the same and from different angles. There are multiple light sources. There's apparently too many photographs, like there were thousands of photographs taken. And when you look at the official record of how long they were there, they'd literally have to be snapping a photograph like every 2 seconds. And there's all kinds of different things. Like if you really put the data up against the story, it falls apart. And that doesn't mean we never went to the moon. That doesn't mean we don't have a colony up there right now. It just means that in those Apollo moon missions, the ones they showed you on TV where they said it was official, it wasn't. I mean, in the age of the internet, in 2016, when you look at that equipment, does it even look it's goofy to me. I mean, we can't even the power went out at the Super Bowl a couple years ago, yet we have all this perfect footage that was transmitted from these moon missions. I mean, these are side issues, but the real data is that you look at those backgrounds, they are the same. You look at the impact crater, it's missing. You know, how suspicious that we tried to get man to the moon one time and we got him back and nobody had any problems. I mean, look at the astronauts once they've came back. They've said a lot of cryptic statements. Buzz Aldrin was wandering drunk through the streets talking about keeping secrets. I mean, talk to the guys themselves. Look at them. I don't think those moon missions are real at all. NASA came out of military intelligence. Why would military intelligence even put their most advanced technology and their most advanced mission on national television? It wouldn't happen. It's a fabrication.
Hey, like you were saying, it could have been in some soundstage.
Greg, you just crushed my childhood, man.
In some soundstage in Hollywood, you know, like you were saying, it could have been done there, you know. You were talking about like Stanley Kubrick, right? He could have been the one that was filming it for the military or for NASA or whatever, you know.
Well,
yeah,
not even
that's the speculation. There's documentaries out there on that. The fact that Kubrick did it. The documentary is called Kubrick's Odyssey. The director who's been on my show a couple of times, his name is escaping me. But yeah, there's a case to be made for that. And then he got invited into the elite circles. And then he made Eyes Wide Shut about their secret sex orgies. And then he ended up dead before the movie came out.
Was that the movie with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman?
It was.
Oh, wow. I did not. Now I know.
Well, now I know not to watch sex and orgies. And I was like, okay, now I'll probably watch it.
I never watched anything with Tom Cruise in it, though. Except Top Gun, maybe. I don't know. But no, I'll definitely take a look at it now that I know the backstory behind it. But again, I mean, that's just being open-minded about it. But, you know, I know I was jokingly saying, oh, you crushed my childhood. But for most people, if you talk to them about, you know, the moon landing, specifically we're talking about one thing here, they're like, no, it can't be, because you're just crushing all the beliefs they've had. And to some people, that's really important to them.
They speak out of anger, and they're more like, this is what I heard. This is what I learned in my textbook. This is what it says. This is fact.
I was sitting on my couch drinking a beer, watching the moon landing on TV.
How many people do you come to you and like oppose what you believe? Or do you have more? Do you find yourself that there's a lot of people that are open to what you have to say, or have people actually come up to you and be like, you know, Greg, you know, what are you spewing? What are you know? How has the reception towards you been?
Obviously, you're going to get both, but there are episodes I put up with a real grin on my face and a real excitement over how provocative I expect it to be and how many feathers I expect it to ruffle, because I kind of like the excitement of that. There's a weird part of my personality that really likes to just watch people's reality tunnels melt. And I am shocked how accepting so many people have been, even on the things I think are the most fringe. And we have explored so many different taboo topics. I don't think there is one. There is no taboo that I can think of that we haven't at least talked about in one episode, even if we haven't revisited it as a reoccurring theme. There's really nothing. And I can't be offended. I mean, any perspective I'm willing to listen to for the most part, as long as I don't feel like it's a total waste of my time.
Yeah.
But nothing causes me to be like, oh my God, that's so radical. I can't even entertain the thought because my fragile reality will come crashing down. I'm pretty flexible in those areas, and you just learn to be. But I'm shocked how little resistance I really face. Even when I went on Chris Jericho's show, I was like, okay, careful, dude, be prepared. You're getting into a very large audience, and they're not conspiracy people, so be prepared. But at the same time, I don't want to tread the same old ground. Every time I'm asked to do a show, there's the same three or four things that you know are going to come up. And so I try to segue to different things because it's just a little bit more interesting, and I don't want it to be so paint by the numbers, but and it's going into those other directions that I'm like, you know, that's where you might take some flack. But even from Jericho, coming home from that show, I've just had so many people like, hey, I'm now a listener. I think your show is great. I heard about you on Jericho. I don't think I got a single message that was, you know, you wasted 2 hours of my fucking time. I want to hear about wrestling, and this guy's got you on, you stupid idiot stoner. I didn't hear any of that. I've done some pretty radical shows. I did one on Sirius XM with Rude Jude. He's actually not very conspiracy sympathetic, and I think I made a decent case for anything that was brought up, and I didn't get any hate there either. I'm a little surprised, but I think that's because I don't try to tell anybody exactly what to think. I don't try to tell anybody anything that's outside of what I know. I'm not Alex Jones with a vein popping out of my forehead while I scream about you, scream at you about how they're coming to take your guns. Like, I just think people should do more digging. You'll find more out, and it's very interesting, compelling stuff. It's very exciting, and yeah, the world's a little more like an episode of The Blacklist than you might think.
Yeah, well, for listening to, like, it sounds, and you made it perfectly, like, stirring the pot a little bit. You're a truest heel in the sense of the word. You love being the heel, don't you?
Yeah, I kind of do. I always liked the villains in movies. I like the heels.
What I
the
like,
Wolfpack was my team. The New World Order, before I even knew what New World Order meant as a conspiracy thing, and this is, people talk about synchronicity as a big thing, the fact that the spirit world or your higher consciousness might be pulling puppet strings, or you might have like coincidences in your life that show your path unfold. And way before I ever was into conspiracy, and I was just a rebel into punk music and hating authority, I loved WCW and the New World Order. That was my crew, and the Wolf Pack. I was just
so you're a WCW
little
guy.
Oh hell yeah! I actually never.
It was cooler,
was
man.
Into
it was
WWF.
it was cooler when the NWO was in there though. So I don't blame him for being an NWO guy.
I'm just curious because Greg, you're the first person I've spoken to ever when I've talked to people about the Monday Night Wars and what a great era that was when you're a wrestling fan, right? And everybody was for WWE. I mean, they had their favorites on the WCW side, but they always wanted WWE to win the supposed war. So
no.
You're a WCW guy.
I really was. I thought WWE was kind of trashy and kind of Hoosier, and I don't know why. That was my impression.
Well, it was too many characters.
It was
too many characters and not real guys like, you know, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash. You'd have like a hockey player. You'd have a clown. It'd be like, you know,
I thought they were
dumpster
cooler.
Guy.
I thought, yeah, Sting coming down from the rafters, taking out the NWO, the Wolf Pack. I loved that whole era. Thought it was very cool. And that was kind of my wrestling heyday. And after that, it was I pretty much gave up on wrestling when WCW went away. I watched the merger for a little while because that was exciting. But once WCW just kind of became a part of WWE, I might have drifted to ECW for a while. I can't remember if they were already bought or not, but it was pretty much over at that point.
Yeah, by that time, they were kind of towards the end of the heyday. Had completely ended with ECW. But I'm just curious, when you had your interview with Chris Jericho, how did he reach out to you?
He reached out to me through email, I believe.
Oh, nice.
I think it was
cool.
Email.
Imagine one day you're flipping through and then you see you see his email and you're like, okay.
Chris Jericho email.
You know what his real name is, right?
Christopher Irvin.
Yeah. So I got an email from Chris Irvin.
There you go.
Irvine. And I didn't know who that was. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it took me a minute to realize it was Chris Jericho, the guy I had a poster on my wall of when I was a kid.
Nice.
But,
please don't tell me that poster with you when you did the interview with him.
I didn't, but I do have a really good friend of mine who was kind of inspired by my show taking off, and his passion was wrestling. So he started dieting, started working out, started getting in the ring, and in his first match, he somebody dropped him on his spine across their knee and gave him a real bad back issue. So here's my buddy who's worked his ass off to make his dream come true and has a permanent injury in his first match. I took a screenshot from him in the ring, like, you know, looking like a badass from that match, and I had Chris Jericho sign it. So he has that sitting on his mantle now.
That's great.
Yeah, but let that be the inspiration. Like, I don't want to brag. I'm just a normal stoner college dropout who lives in San Diego and is getting by on a podcast. But let that be the inspiration, because 5 years ago, you tell me that Chris Jericho is going to want something from me? Like, no, it's unbelievable. So if you start doing you and you start, you know, creating a product that you're passionate about that you sell online, or you start talking about your opinions or whatever you think your talent is, your true will, whatever you think it is, start doing it and things will unfold for you that you never thought were possible. Chris Jericho wasn't going to come into my GameStop and want to shoot the shit with me. You know, you got to get out of there. You got to do something different.
I mean, well said, Greg. And we're here with Greg Carwood. Find him on HigherSideChats.com, his podcast. Again, he'll get you thinking. Follow him on Twitter at HigherSideChats. Before we close, and I know we've kept you way longer than we thought we would.
It's just so great talking to Greg. I don't want to let him go.
You know,
all right,
like
Jeff,
I'm sorry. It's like three guys, like, you know, shooting the breeze here. And one final thing is, we talk about, you know, UFOs, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monsters, unexplained things. You know, we've talked about, you know, cover-ups. This is probably one of the main ones, the classic ones and stuff like this. To me, I think there's stuff out there. Loch Ness Monsters, maybe not so much. But, you know what, there has to be, we have to be getting our technology somehow. We must have run, yeah, you know, gone into either Roswell was accurate, either, you know, we have made contact and it's a cover-up. I know if I was president, the first thing I'd like to see is, like, let me see the aliens, you know, let me see your UFO records, you know. How much are you a believer in that?
Well, not to open too big of a can of worms that takes too much to explain, but I am now getting to the opinion through the research, through talking to other guys that I have a lot of respect for, I'm getting to the point where I think that an episode like Roswell is a cover-up. The conspiracy narrative that an alien spaceship crashed in the desert, I think that's a cover-up for something more paranormal, I guess, in a sense, or more related to the spirit world or altered states of consciousness. And I know that's crazy, but if you look at the nexus of MKUltra, and if you've experienced altered states and actually come in contact with entities in other, I guess, dimensions, you could call them, or the spirit world, it happens fairly quickly with psychedelics. And MKUltra experiments were all about altered states. And I think as soon as they realized they were contacting something else, they kept going at it. If you've seen Stranger Things, I think that the idea that messing with these alternate realms too much might actually cause something to manifest. And I think that might be what happened, that somehow they caused something to manifest in the Nevada desert. And they aren't going to tell you that. And the only thing they could say, because some people did see it, was that it was an alien spacecraft. But I think that there are beings that we share this reality with, mm-hmm, that might actually be in another dimension, might be inside the Earth, something. But there's a lot of indigenous tribes that have stories about being helped in the past by some kind of intelligent beings. A lot of mythology is based around this idea. And we just say this is all silliness. But if you look at Irish lore, they talk about being visited by little people. I mean, this isn't a new phenomenon. And I think that this alien ufology sector of conspiracy should really merge more with the occult. And I think it's actually something that is a lot closer to home and still very real. And I think that that is what they're messing with when it comes to Roswell. But I do think something was reverse engineered, because if you look at it's the transistor that everybody says was derived from alien technology. And the transistor is the basis for basically all of our technology. And if you look at the official history of the transistor, it's very light. There's not much there. It came out of Bell Labs, which is a very occulty company. They have a lot of strange ties to odd things, including the seance for the Council of Nine, which is a big can of worms. But if you just Google the seance that changed the world, you'll learn a little something about elite belief systems that it might freak you out. But I think something really happened, but I think it has more to do with the occult than it has to do with sci-fi. And I think that's the real dirty secret of ufology. And that's why we don't have any bodies. That's why we don't have that's why these things are so elusive. And a lot of the stories involve things materializing or dematerializing, because I think it is some kind of crossover with an intelligence that is rooted here. And I know that's weird, but, you know, if you're really interested in the perspective, it won't take long for you to find out more.
I tell you, man, after this, even prepping for this, I was just looking up all this stuff, and it's just amazing how, YouTube's addictive to begin with, but just going on YouTube and then just going on the internet and surfing the internet, how addictive the stuff comes up to be, and actually looking into it. Greg Carlwood here, guys. You catch him on Twitter at Higher Side Chats, also our website HigherSideChats.com. Greg, anything we can look forward to in the future that you might be coming up? I mean, there are always millions of conspiracies, obviously the popular ones we spoke about now that everybody likes to talk about. But anything in the near future, a certain project coming up that you can share with us?
Well, you know, the Higher Side Chats is the show, always doing more. I have had a t-shirt company called Conspiraties that are available at conspiraties.net. Nice.
And I'm getting it's a shirt right now.
imagery that is invoked from the ideas of the show. But that is kind of winding down, and I'm starting T-Shirt Company 2.0, which I think is the company that I learned from my mistakes. I'm doing things a lot better. I can actually afford to pay artists a lot more. So I think the quality all around is so much sicker, and it's going to be the Higher Side clothing. And that should be within the next week or two. But there are some amazing art pieces that actually talk about, they describe detailed stories like the Titanic conspiracy in a single graphic. And I just think it's the t-shirt company of my dreams, and I'm happy to be able to actually put it out. But thehighersidechats.com for the show, thehighersideclothing.com for the t-shirts, and that's pretty much my life in a nutshell.
Wow.
I mean, really, though, honestly, though, just an inspiration, because we like to have a lot of guests here that, you know, send out the right message of, hey, you know what, don't settle for mediocrity, you know, do what you love, because you only get one shot at it, you only get one life, and maybe...
Right.
Greg says, maybe we have more lives, but we just, you know, don't know it. But depending on what you believe in, if we have lives or not in the afterlife. But no, really, though, you really have, inspired me and Brian, because this is what we want to do. This is what we love. This is our passion. And you've been so kind and so with your time that you've allowed for us. So we just want to say thank you, Greg. And, you know, we'd love to have you back on and talk more of this stuff, because this is just, you could talk about this for hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could. And thanks for having me. I would love to do it again sometime.
Awesome.
All right, Greg Carlwood, everybody, here on the High Spot Podcast. Greg, thanks so much, and we'll see you down the road, man.
All right, peace.
So many conspiracies, Bri, and I mean, wow. I mean, we heard him on Talking to Jericho, and I knew that I had to get him on the show, and just so insightful, and, you know, a whole new world we live in, and you can see how excited he got when we were talking about legalization of marijuana. But, Bri, again, though, much thanks and kudos goes out to Greg Carlwood.
Oh, definitely. We could have talked to him for hours and hours, and the conversation kept flowing really nice. So it's great to talk to Greg about that, and I'm sure down in the near future there'll be a lot more conspiracy theories we'll be discussing as time goes by. I'd love to have him back on again sooner than later. But Jeff, you know, with all that happening, I got to ask you the main question. With all the holiday season coming along, what you doing for Thanksgiving, man?
Oh, man, I am going to be lazy, and I'm just going to chill, watch some football, find a relax. The first time that we both get a chance to, you know, just enjoy Turkey Day and just get a chance to enjoy the festivities and, you know, just eat and watch some football. So that's what I'm going to be doing, man. I don't know about you, but what does Brian the Trendsetter do for Thanksgiving?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know? Are you really asking me? Well, what I do, Jeff, is basically, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, this is going to be the first time in a long time, guys, that I'll actually be off on Thanksgiving. I'm usually always working or doing other stuff and, you know, making that money. But this will be the first time I'm actually going to be off. So I really know what I'm going to do. I think for the first time, I'm not going to plan stuff. I'm just going to let things happen as they are. Definitely going to go hit the gym a little bit, not feeling as guilty for the food that I'm going to eat later on that night. But maybe I'll join you on that lazy day, Jeff. You never know.
Hey, man. But again, though, we want to wish everybody from the High Spot Podcast and Brain Stew Radio, who you just want to say thank you, and also to just want to announce that last week was our very first installment of our NXT Weekly show. This is NXT Weekly at the Fans Podcast, and you know, it went pretty well, and we'll be doing that. We'll be doing our NXT Weekly show with them. So, I mean, a lot of good stuff going on, but again, first and foremost, the High Spot Podcast wishes everybody a happy and safe Thanksgiving and holiday season.
I would just tell Jeff right there, drop the mic, because we are the Jersey American Crew, and this is the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, as well as our partnership with Brain Stew Radio Network at Brain Stew Radio. Jeff, my tag team partner, have a happy Thanksgiving. I will see you next week, and we are out. And after this, there is no conspiracy after listening to this, because your life will just be too sweet.
Gobble, gobble.